Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, man, there is so much that we are going to be getting into today. The Chicago voter database hacked. Yes, that's the headline on ABC News. Here's another one from ABC. Electronic voting machines could skew elections. We have a terror alert. You're not going to believe the number of terror attacks inside the United States that have been happening recently. Nick Kristof, some interesting thoughts on Iraq and what it's costing us. That and as we go throughout the day, Matt Moore is going to be with us in our he's going to be with us in just a few seconds here. Bob Borisage is going to be with us in the second hour, president of Institute for America's Future. So just a lot going on. And right now, Matt Moore is with us. He is an expert at the National Center for Policy Analysis, the website ncpa.org, which I think could probably be accurately characterized. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, as a conservative think tank?
Yeah, we're a free market think tank.
So a libertarian think tank?
Along those lines, yeah.
More or less, yeah. So the 300 millionth American has been born. And you guys sent out a news release to all us talk show hosts saying, this kid is really going to take it. He's going to get whacked big time because longer life expectancy, higher taxes, et cetera. Well, rather than my giving your talking points, well, go for it.
Well, I'll say there's some pluses and minuses here. I think the plus is that this kid is born into a country that's healthier and wealthier and freer than any country in the history of the world. So there are a lot of opportunities that are going to
well,
be there.
Well, let me just challenge that. The news this morning, by and large, the economic news, is that the United States is now the sixth most competitive country economically in the world. That and in terms of press freedom, the worldwide freedom press freedom index, put together by Reporters Without Borders, which is not. It's not a partisan group. In fact, they're not even based in the United States. They list the United States as number 53 in terms of press freedom in the world, down from number 17 when George W. Bush was first elected. So we are not apparently freer, and we are number six now, down from number one just a few years ago in terms of economic freedom.
Well, there's no denying that the economy is growing and has been for years. It has been for decades, really, if you look back over the longer history. And this 300 millionth American is going to be able to reap the rewards of that throughout his life.
Assuming that he's born into a wealthy family.
Well, assuming that he is born into a family and has the opportunity to go out and, go to college, get a job, and participate in this American experiment.
Right. In other words, he's born into a wealthy family.
Well, I disagree with that characterization, but what I would say is that whether he is rich or whether he is poor, or whether it's a boy or a girl, over the course of his or her life, they're going to see this country steadily aging as he goes through his life because of longer life expectancies, because the number of retirees will be growing, and the burden on that 300 millionth American is going to grow as he goes through his life to try to support the benefits that we're promising to older Americans through Social Security and Medicare.
So let's assume for a moment, without getting into an argument about whether or not we should have free college education in the United States and some of these side issues, because really I know where you want to bring this whole thing, which is Social Security and Medicare, those dreaded entitlement programs, and the legacies, essentially, of the New Deal. And I see this, frankly, as part of the war on the New Deal, basically, as declared by, for example, Limbaugh.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
The simple fact of the matter, though, Matt Moore, is that if we were to simply do away with the cap on Social Security and make it just a flat tax, like Steve Forbes is running around saying we should all embrace, Social Security would be, well, and for that matter, if we made Social Security tax a flat tax as well, both these programs would be solvent forever.
Well, if we ignore for a moment the economic effects of a 50% tax rate on higher earners,
I didn't suggest a 50% tax rate on anybody.
I said
if I'm earning less than $90,000 a year and I'm paying 6.5%, 7%, or with my employer I'm paying 12 or 13% into Social Security, and Bill Gates is not paying even a penny on it after his first $90,000, but now all of a sudden he has to pay the same 6.5%, 7%, 8%, or with his employer the 13% that I'm paying, the problem's solved. What's wrong with that? That's not 50%.
I think the moral here is that we could muddle through, you know, with Social Security, raising taxes on wealthier earners, probably cutting back some benefits for wealthier earners. I think the big story here is Medicare. I mean, Medicare is six times the size of Social Security, you know, the long-term debt of the program. Health spending is soaring faster than economic growth, and it's really that the Medicare spending that's going to catch us in a trap. I mean,
the Medicare spending is growing right now because we have a for-profit health system. We pay in the United States twice as much as any other industrialized nation for health care, and yet we insure fewer people and we have a poorer quality of service and standard of service in the United States than virtually any other industrialized country. Last study done by the United Nations ranked us just above Cuba, and you know at number 34. As I recall, maybe it was number 27. In terms of the health care delivered to people. This has allowed Bill McGuire, the head of United Healthcare, to take a $1.5 billion paycheck last year and turn Bill Frist's daddy into a multi-billionaire. But it's screwing Americans. If we simply went with a Medicare for all, a national health care program with a single payer, you know, make the government the single payer and kept, you know, private enterprise out there, but a single-payer healthcare system where they could negotiate with pharmaceutical companies, which isn't in Medicare right now. I mean, that's the poison pill that the cons put in there. And that it was basically eliminating the health insurance companies, these giant leeches that are sucking anywhere from 20 to 30% of all healthcare dollars spent out of the system and producing absolutely no benefit to the system whatsoever. We could have health care in the United States instead of for $11,000 per person, which is what we're paying right now, for around $5,000 or $6,000 per person.
Well, it sounds like you practiced that speech before. I mean, what I can say is that, you know, the health spending in this country, particularly for the elderly, is growing faster than health spending for the young. Health spending overall is growing faster than economic growth, and if we're going to continue to provide the benefits to the elderly people in the way that we do under current law, we're going to have to come to terms with the cost that we're running up for our kids and our grandkids. And we're talking about very significant costs. I mean, we're talking about taking, you know, four out of every $10 they earn just to pay for Medicare benefits. Add Social Security to that, add Medicaid to that, and you're talking about leaving them not very much left over to pay for their own savings, send their own kids to college. The points that we're trying to make is that we need to come to terms, first of all, with the cost that we're running up. I think that the solution to both of the problems, first of all, is to start ratcheting down some of the spending that we make or that we do for the highest earners. Because, you know, you're talking about a Bill Gates. When he retires, he doesn't need that $1,000 a month Social Security check.
In other words, you're going to convert these from entitlement programs into welfare programs.
Well,
that's the first step to destroying the program, because it's very fashionable to do away with welfare programs. Nobody wants to do away with entitlement programs.
Oh, it's not my aim to get rid of Social Security or Medicare. I mean, my grandmother depends on those two programs for her retirement benefits. I'm not going to take that away from her. I'm not going to take that away from my mom. What I'm trying to do is come up with a way to ensure that we can sustain these programs through the baby boomer years, through my birth year, the Generation Xers, so that Generation Y, my kids, my grandkids, can afford my benefits.
So how do you do that?
Well, again, I'm ratcheting back benefits for the higher earners, and I would like to see with Social
Security. But the higher earners the higher earners, we're talking about 1% of the population, so you're going to ratchet back the benefits for 1% of the population. That's going to do nothing to the cost of this program.
It's a start.
We would do
something along the lines of what you had suggested, raising the cap for Social Security. That's another step. And I would like to see some pre-funding. I'd like to see some expand, for instance, health savings accounts so that we can begin saving more for our own health expenditures in retirement, but start saving while we're working.
Well, you talk about pre-funding. I mean, this generation that is fixing to retire right now, the baby boomers, are the first generation to not only have paid for their parents' retirement in Social Security. I mean, up until 1982, all the money that Social Security was spending out, was paying out, was coming in. So each generation was paying for their parents' and grandparents' retirement. This generation actually started a savings account to pay for its own retirement
on top of paying for its parents' retirement when Ronald Reagan doubled the Social Security tax rate. And I mean, there's that enormous amount of cash, in theory anyway, right now it's debt, in the Social Security Trust Fund to deal with that. I mean, that's already been done, the prepayment.
Well, and I think that you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about the trust fund. I mean, we have been setting aside this money supposedly in the trust fund, but Congress has been taking that since the trust fund was created and spending that on other programs,
well,
leaving
been borrowing
us with debt that we're going to have to pay back.
Right, and
therein lies the
legacy. Yeah, therein lies the problem.
Well, therein lies the problem. If we raise tax rates, if we bring in all this new tax revenue to Social Security, that's going to be spent too. We've got no way to save that new money.
So Reagan's idea of starve the beast, or David Stockman's idea, is, in your opinion, actually going to work?
Well, that's why prepayment through things like personal retirement accounts, health savings accounts, is the only way to go, because that ensures that the new money is saved.
Okay. Matt Moore, ncpa.org, the website. Matt, good talking with you today.
All right, thank you.
16 minutes past the hour.
Heaven and the road only know where we're going. And we're just along for the ride, for the thrill of the flight. Let your heart be your guide. We're along for the ride.
And welcome back to the place for being progressive. Never felt so good. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. We salute free enterprise and our sponsors, including Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. Their telephone number, 1-800-425-2532. 1-800-425-2532. Give them a call and say hi. SacredGroundsCoffee.com. And Small Dog Electronics. Get the latest iPods now. 1-800-511-MAX and SmallDog.com, their website. Oh, and by the way, at SacredGroundsCoffee.org. Grounds with an S, sacredgroundscoffee.com. .org, okay. Sacredgroundscoffee.com. If you plug the word fall, F-A-L-L, as in the season, into your checkout box, you'll get a 15% discount on some of the coolest coffee around. Okay, economics. What's going on with economics here in the United States? This, first of all, this whole thing about taxes, there is such a canard here. There's such a phony argument. This is... And it's so important to get this. If I am an employee of, you know, an employer, and that employer knows that I'm willing to work for them for what, at the end of the day, after all the taxes are paid and all the deductions are taken out and health insurance is paid for and everything else, my net check that I walk away with is, let's say, just to pull a number out of the air, is $50,000 a year. If they know that I'm willing to work for $50,000 a year, and then you go back and you say, oh, but you look at all the taxes and all that kind of thing, and let's say that you have to make $75,000 to pay that to actually walk home with $50,000. So taxpayers sit around at the end of the year and around on April 3rd or April 15th rather. And they're doing their taxes, and they're going, geez, I paid $25,000 in taxes this year on $75,000 in income. And again, these are just, for example, numbers. And, boy, those Republicans, they say that they want me to keep more of that $75,000 that I'm making, and I sure would like to. It sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds really seductive, and you get Sean Hannity going, it's your money. You know, and you say, well, yeah, I'd like more of my money. So let's say that we pass a huge tax cut for people who are making $75,000 a year, or $50,000, or $20,000 a year. So now, to use our magical, you know, just our for example, because it's sort of on the high end of the middle class. I think the median income in the United States is like $44,500 or something like that. So take somebody who's making $75,000 a year and walking home with $50,000. And now their taxes have been cut in half. Now they're making $75,000 and walking home with $62,500, right? Wrong. Because the employer knows that they're willing to work for $50,000 at the end of the day. So if the taxes get cut in half, what's the employer going to do? They're going to cut your pay. They'd be crazy not to. They're not going to do it in one day. But we've been seeing this process happen for the last 26 years. They're going to cut your pay. They'll figure out ways to do it, whether it's union busting or there's just a million ways that they'll do it. They will cut your pay down to the point where they know that you're willing to work for that. Now, there's an exception to that. Let's say instead of my getting a paycheck, where I end up walking home at the end of the day with $50,000. Let's say instead that I own my own business and I can pay myself anything I damn well please within reason out of the profits of the company. And so let's say at the end of the year I own my own business and I decide to pay myself $75,000. Knowing that after I pay $25,000 in taxes, I'm going to walk home with $50,000. Again, just using these for example numbers. Now, if there's a tax cut, I'm still paying myself $75,000, so it's still costing my business $75,000 that I own. My expenses are the same. I can still make my product at the same profit margin. I can still, you know, everything is the same. And yet, as the owner of the business, I'm not going to cut my salary. I'm going to end up with more money in my pocket. So really, and all the more so if, let's say, I make $75 million a year. And after paying $25 million in taxes, I end up with $50 million. And now, with a tax cut, instead of walking home with $50 million at the end of the year, I'm walking home with $62.5 million at the end of the year. This is what average American working people don't get. There is no tax cut for all practical purposes. I mean, you can build an argument for it at the super extremes, but by and large, there is no tax cut that is going to result in increased walking around money for average working people. The people who benefit from tax cuts are the people who can set their own salaries, period, who can decide how much they are paying themselves. Because those people who are drawing their salary in the marketplace, competitive with other workers, their salary is going to go down if their taxes go down. Alternatively, if their taxes go up, their salary will go up because they're going to have that $50,000 at the end of the day for the year. I mean, because that's what the market, by and large, has determined that's what they've decided they're willing to work for. So, I mean, all of this stuff is a canard for the rich. 27 minutes past the hour.
A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be.
Indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone. High up in the... We're low down. I don't know. We're on the Willamette River. I think we're pretty close to sea level, actually, here in Little Beirut. The People's Republic of Portland, Oregon. A reminder, just a heads up, Friday this week, it's coming, 7 to 9 p.m., University of San Francisco War Memorial Gymnasium, the Great Debate 2, second annual Great Debate, put on by The Quake, KQKE, in San Francisco, and KNEW, the conservative station in San Francisco. And you can get free tickets. I'll be there, along with Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, and Johnny Steele, debating Jack Armstrong, Joe Getty, Jerry Doyle, and Rusty Humphreys. Willie Brown going to moderate. You can get free tickets over at quakeradio.com. Should be a hoot. Talking about taxes, the point that I was making with all that is what has reached the point where it's so outrageous that people can't even say it, and yet I'm going to say it out loud. If we're going to pay for the things that we want to have as an economy and as a people, if we want the United States to work, if we want it to function, and we talked yesterday about the Scientific American study, that Scientific American study that pointed out how the Scandinavian countries are actually doing better than we are economically. You know that Frederick von Hayek was wrong. That the countries of Denmark, Norway, Finland, and Sweden spend 27% of their gross domestic product on so-called social programs. In other words, everybody has health care, everybody has old age insurance, everybody has a good social safety net. They pay 27%. We spend 17%. So they have higher taxes. Does that mean that their middle class makes less? No. Their middle class actually makes more than our middle class. Well, how can that be? The taxes are higher. Well, because the pay is higher. Well, who then is losing? The rich. In Finland, Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, people who earn more than $1 million a year, and certainly those who earn more than $5 or $10 million a year, pay a much higher percentage of those millions in taxes than do the average working slot. And, you know, no aspersions intended. I consider myself one, here too. On average, and so does this mean that their economies are in the tank, as our guest would have you think, as the economic conservatives would have you? Well, they have high tax rates. That must kill their economy. No. On average, the Nordic countries outperform the Anglo-Saxon ones on most measures of economic performance. Poverty rates are lower. National income per working age population, on average, higher. Unemployment rates, just about the same. Plus, they're not running up huge budget deficits. Conservative economics is killing us. If we went back to the tax structure that we had during the golden age of the American middle class from 1940 to 1980, where working people paid pretty much the same percentage of their taxes as they pay right now, but millionaires and billionaires paid a much higher percentage. The millionaires and billionaires don't get as rich as fast, although they're still doing very well, thank you very much. And you have a strong middle class. I realize that some people will say, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. And I would say, yep, you're right. Well, why would you do that? Because it's the right thing to do. And it's not just like it's the moral issue, it's the appropriate thing. The more money I make out of this economy, the more of the commons I am making use of. It's very simple. If I'm making millions of dollars a year, then I am doing that on the substrate of the commons, of a court system and a monetary system and a financial system and the result of an education, all of the commons there. I'm doing that on that substrate, and I'm more heavily using it. I should be paying a larger portion of it. I mean, this was common sense in America for 200 years. And Reagan came along and turned it on its head, and now people just don't get it. You know, the World Economic Forum, they have their meeting in Davos, Switzerland, and people go and protest, you know, because they're in favor of globalization and stuff. The World Economic Forum is not a liberal think tank. It's about as conservative as you can get. This report just came out from the World Economic Forum. The United States, and I'll just read it right straight up, the United States is no longer the most competitive economy in the world. In fact, it has slipped from first all the way to sixth. I would add, by the way, this, you know, I'm not quoting, reading from the report right now. I would add, because of George W. Bush's insane tax policies, combined with Bill Clinton's insane international trade policies. Let me go back to reading the report and, you know, without commentary. The U.S. is no longer the most competitive economy in the world. In fact, it has slipped from first all the way to sixth. According to the World Economic Forum's annual survey, Switzerland has taken the top spot, with Finland, Sweden, Denmark, and Singapore all surpassing the United States. The reason cited by the organization was the ever-increasing budget and trade deficits, as well as an increasing weakness in education, health care, and the effectiveness of leadership in the United States. Now, what is it that gives a company the ability to have a strong educational system, free education all the way up to the level of a PhD if you can do it? Taxes. What is it that allows a nation to have a strong health care system where everybody has access to health? Taxes. What is it that allows a country to have an effective government that doesn't leave 1,800 people dead when a hurricane hits? Taxes. And middle-class people, working people, say, oh, my God, he wants to raise my taxes. No, you don't get it. taxes go up or down, it doesn't affect working people. It doesn't affect the middle class because the middle class's pay is always going to be a function of net. It's always going to be after taxes. When you're negotiating pay with an employer, when an employer is deciding what they're going to pay, they're going to pay the least that they know that they can afford, that they can get away with, and you're going to demand the most, you know, I can pay the mortgage and I can, you know, when all is said and done. If taxes go up, then middle class wages go up. The only people who make out like bandits when there are big tax cuts are people who have control over their own salaries, their own pay, people who write their own paychecks, entrepreneurs and CEOs. That's it. And, you know, the Danes know this, the Swedes know this, the Norwegians know this. I mean, this is common sense all over the world, except for here. In the meantime, now I got an email from the guy who actually wrote this, and he sent me his name, and I put it on my little scratch pad thing here so that I would be able to cite his name the next time I read it, and my computer crashed and I've lost his name. So if you're listening, give me an email again and I'll credit you tomorrow with your name. I'm sorry. But this is all over the internet. Joe Republican. Joe gets up at 6 a.m. and fills his coffee pot with water, prepare his morning coffee. See, this is people say, oh, we don't want taxes. We don't want government doing things. That wouldn't be American, right? Joe gets up at 6 a.m. and fills his coffee pot with water to prepare his morning coffee. The water is clean and good because some tree-hugging liberal fought for minimum water quality standards. With his first swallow of coffee, he takes his daily medication. His meds are safe because some stupid commie liberal fought to ensure their safety and that they worked as advertised. All but $10 of Joe's medications are paid for by his employer's medical plan because some liberal union workers fought their employers for paid medical insurance. Now Joe gets it too. He prepares his morning breakfast, bacon and eggs. His bacon is safe to eat because some girly man liberal fought for laws to regulate the meatpacking industry. In the morning shower, Joe reaches for his shampoo. His bottle is properly labeled with each ingredient and its amount and the total contents because some crybaby liberal fought for his right to know what he's putting on his body and how much it contains. Joe dresses, walks outside, and takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some environmentalist wacko liberal fought for laws to stop industries from polluting our air. He walks to the subway station for his government-subsidized ride to work. Yes. It saves him considerable money in parking and transportation fees because some fancy-pants liberal fought for affordable public transportation, which gives everyone the opportunity to be a contributor. Joe begins his work day. He's got a good job with excellent pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays, vacation. Why? Because liberal union leaders fought and died to make these working standards. At noontime, he goes to the bank to deposit some money. His deposit is federally insured. Why? Because some liberal fought to protect the banking system. Joe has paid his Fannie Mae underwritten mortgage and his below-market federal student loan because some elitist liberal decided that Joe and the government would be better off if he was educated and earned more money over his lifetime. Joe gets back in his car for the ride home, turns on talk radio show. Radio host keeps saying that liberals are bad, conservatives are good. He doesn't mention that the beloved Republicans have fought against every protection and benefit Joe enjoys through the other day. He agrees. He said, we don't need these big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves just like I have. Yeah, Joe. 45 minutes past the hour. I got to tell you about the terrorists in our midst. A major terror alert coming up right after this. Tom Hartman.
Anybody here see my friend Jack Abramoff? Can you tell me where he's gone? Last time I saw him, he was influence peddling. The conviction came, now he's gone.
Ah, oh, poor Jack.
Anybody here see my old friend Tom DeLay? Can you tell me where he's gone? He took corporate money for Texas elections. The indictment came, now he's gone.
And a fine thing it is. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman radio program. I have to share this terrorist alert with you. This is just incredible. By the way, tonight, I'm introducing Al Gore here in Portland, Oregon, and moderating a Q&A with him afterwards. And how do you introduce the President of the United States, the best President of the United States who was never President of the United States? Is that the phrase that I should use? I mean, he was elected President of the United States by the majority of the people. He was elected President of the United States by the majority of people, even in Florida. But he was never President of the United States. So you've got to figure out a way to say that. I don't know. I'm kind of struggling with that. Anyhow, we'll see it. Terrorists. And I know there's a bunch of you who are calling about some of the various topics that we brought up this morning. Just a heads up. At the beginning of the next hour, in the third hour of our program, we have no guests. At the beginning of the next hour, Bob Borisage is going to be with us just for the first 15 minutes from the top of the hour until about quarter after. He's the president of the Institute for America's Future. They put on this big conference every year in Washington, D.C., and he's the co-director of its sister organization, the Campaign for America's Future. We're going to be talking about what's going on in politics and what's going on with all that sort of thing. If you would like to speak with Bob, or if you have questions for Bob, give us a call. 866-440-8466, and we'll put you on with him. I'm finding that's fascinating to have our callers and our guests interact with each other. I think sometimes it's more interesting than just having me go on with them. And I'll also be getting to your calls as we go on throughout the program. So if you're on hold, you can just hang out there if you don't mind for a little while. And if not, because I have to tell you about this terrorist alert. This is big time. You talk about be afraid, be very afraid. Just imagine if on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, let me posit this first as a what if. How would CNN and Fox News and ABC and CBS and NBC, how would they deal with it if on September 11th, 2006, just a few weeks ago, a month and a half ago, the fifth anniversary of 9/11, if a guy had driven a suicide bomb car into a building and blown it up and tried to kill himself and all the people in the building? Don't you think that would just make screaming headlines? Terror attack on anniversary of 9/11? What if that guy was a member of an organization, a terrorist group, on whose website it tells Americans, I'm going to kill you, quote, end quote. He says, quote, I am a terrorist, I'm going to kill you, end quote, on his website. This is an organization. This isn't one guy. This is an organization. And what if I told you that organization had accomplished 7 murders inside the United States? This is all inside the United States. 7 murders, 17 attempted murders, 3 kidnappings, 152 assaults, 305 completed or attempted bombings and arsons, 375 invasions, 482 stalking incidents, 380 death threats, 618 bomb threats, 1,000 attacks where they had thrown acid on people, and 1,254 acts of vandalism. What if I told you that they had sent 77 anthrax letters, or letters threatening anthrax, before 9/11, and since 9/11, they have sent 554 more letters containing white powder and messages saying, you have been exposed to anthrax, we are going to kill you. Don't you think if that happened in the United States, that CNN, NBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News would be all over it? Screaming headlines? Terror attacks in the United States! Well, it did happen. Here's the story from today's Newsday. On September 11, 2005, the fifth anniversary of the terror attacks that devastated our nation, a man crashed his car into a building in Davenport, Iowa, hoping to blow it up and kill himself in the fire. No national newspaper, magazine, or network newscast reported this attempted suicide bombing, even though there was an AP Wire story available. Cable news, except for MSNBC's Keith Olbermann, was silent about this latest act of terrorism in America. Had the criminal, a man by the name of David McMenemy, been Arab or Muslim, this would have been headline news for weeks. But because his target was the Edgerton's Women's Health Center And he says he's a fundamentalist Christian fighting a holy war. It was not covered. Since 1997, casualties from this war include 7 murders, 17 attempted murders, 3, well, I read you the list before, over 554 anthrax attacks. This is a group, these were signed by the Army of God, a group that hosts scripture-filled web pages for anti-abortion heroes of the faith, including Minister Paul Hill, Michael Griffin, James Kopp, all convicted of murdering abortion providers, and a convicted clinic bomber, Michael Bray. Clayton Wagoner mailed anthrax letters while a fugitive on the FBI's list. I am a terrorist, he says on the Army of God's website. It doesn't matter to me if you're a nurse, receptionist, bookkeeper, or janitor. If you work for the murderous abortionist, I'm going to kill you, end quote. Which, by the way, brings us back to the car bomber. He tried to blow up the Women's Health Center in a suicide bombing. They don't provide abortions. What they provide are pap smears, testing for STDs, birth control pills, and nutrition and immunization programs for pregnant women and children. He got it wrong. But he blew up his car anyway. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination.
Well, actually, we fiendishly plot for clean elections. Yeah, what can I say? I guess I just have to own up to it. Total world domination sounds kind of cool, but that's really Dick Cheney's department. We're more interested in clean elections because we know if we have clean elections in the United States and people get out and get active and get involved and they get involved in the political process and they show up and they vote and they participate and they go door to door and they tell their friends that the progressive worldview is going to win because we're where most of America is. It's just that simple. And one of the leaders of the movement, as it were, in that area is Bob Borisage. He is the president of the Institute for America's Future, the co-director of its sister organization, the Campaign for America's Future, the website ourfuture.org. Bob Borisage, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Just great. Great to have you here with us. Bob, you're writing about the rise of the populists in the Senate. There are a few. There also seem to be a lot of kind of DLC type, well, you know, it's not quite very far from populist. What are you talking about?
Well, that's one of the most exciting things about this election is you're going to see the election of Bernie Sanders from Vermont, who runs as a Democratic Socialist, actually. You're going to see the election.
Well, he runs as an independent, actually.
Yeah,
he would not refer to himself as a Democratic Socialist.
You're going to see Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who's an extraordinary, really bread-and-butter populist. John Tester in Montana, Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota. These are new voices with real energy who will change the debate in the Senate, change both the Democratic caucus and the Senate. And so it's going to be an exciting election.
Are you of the opinion, Bob, that the Democrats are actually going to take the House and or the Senate in this election?
Well, I've been a pessimist until the Foley scandal. I think the House is. I think we are going to take the House. The Senate, I think, is dicier.
Yeah. Did you see the piece in Barron's yesterday about money?
Yeah, the money stuff and the ground operation is pretty frightening. They've got a ground operation that Democrats don't have, and that's ridiculous, given that we are the progressive populist side of the political spectrum. But
yeah,
their operation is going to be worth 2 or 3 points, I think, in a lot of these races.
You know that the election is being driven by the failure conservative rule, and yet, and to some extent, people on the right are using this as a almost as a talking point on, you know, the talking heads. Well, yeah, the Bushies didn't actually accomplish shrinking government like they said, as if that's some high ideal, number one. And number two, it completely ignores the points that have been put forward by Howard Dean and Nancy Pelosi. Howard Dean's, I think, is 5 or 6 points that we would do as soon as we got power, and Nancy Pelosi's first 100 hours agenda.
Yeah, there is, I think on their side, you know, you've just had massive conservative misrule. The Iraq fiasco, the Katrina disaster, the kitchen table pressures that every American family is feeling, where their basic position is you're on your own, and of course the corruption of all times, of all kinds in this city, from DeLay to Foley. People are really ready for a change. Whether or not we get it, they've got a better political campaign, they got more money, and they've got the advantage of incumbency with gerrymandering and God knows about the machines. But
what they
really
don't have, is the issues, and what they don't have right now is the passion of the people.
And on the Democratic side, you've got an agenda that Pelosi, who has played a remarkable role here, has Democrats in both House and Senate signed up to pass in the first 100 hours of the Congress, and that includes raising the minimum wage, cutting the interest rates in half on student and parent loans, cutting drug prices by giving Medicare the power to negotiate better drug prices, investing in alternative energy and repealing the subsidies to the big oil companies, revoking the tax break that helps corporations take jobs abroad, and passing the 9/11 commission recommendations, and of course cleaning up Congress. That's a powerful first step of basic stuff that will show a very different direction than these last years.
It really is. It really, really and truly is. Let me let some of our callers in here. David in Des Moines, Iowa on the line. Our number 1-866-440-8466. We're talking with Bob Borisaj, the president of the Institute for America's Future and co-director of the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. David, what's up?
Yeah, I like to mention you have older people, the baby boomers aging, and you have veterans coming in, you know, kind of adjusting to the life here domestically. And I was thinking two issues. There was a survey done that the elderly out in other countries are satisfied getting older because of access to education, number one. And number two, as you get older or if you're disabled, you have a hard time trying to get from point A to point B, like the doctor's office or something like this. The two issues I like to see, like your program and your guest, to advocate that we greatly expand the state university system education, where they have like satellite classes at various places where people live. And also, number two, if you need to get to the doctor's office, you can call a bus on demand to pick you up from your home instead of waiting at the bus stop.
Okay. Bob, your thoughts? I mean, the United States is one of the few industrialized countries where you can't go to college all the way up to a PhD let me reverse that. We're about the only country in the world where if you want to get a college education, you end up as an indentured servant when you graduate.
Right. Well, we've been pounding on this. You know, the cost of college has gone up 42% college tuition since Bush took office. And the Pell Grants haven't gone up, that are the basic scholarship program. The student loans rates, they just took $12 billion out of the program and hiked the interest rates for both students and programs. The result is you got students on the average graduating with over $20,000 worth of debt before they get their first job. This is, you know, you're pricing college out of the reach of more and more sons and daughters of working people. At the same time, you say in the global economy, the only ticket to the middle class that we know of is go get a college education and you'll make your way. Well, that's a real outrage in this country, which historically our prosperity has been based on leading the world in giving people educational opportunity, and that's got to get turned around. So I agree with your caller. We've got to make college affordable and available to everyone who earns their admission.
And medical care as well.
Well, and of course the other thing he's mentioning is basically the lack of mass transit, which is getting cut across our cities and our urban areas and getting more expensive too. And you can't have a continued process of ignoring the investments we need in basic public facilities and have basic services like he was talking about for seniors.
No, absolutely. We only have a couple minutes left here. Warren in Sacramento, California. Hey, Warren, you're live with Bob Borisaj.
Hey, thank you guys very much. I appreciate this. The specific question I had was the bankruptcy legislation that was passed this last year that made it so much more difficult for a person to go through bankruptcy than it had been previously. Do you anticipate that being reversed as a priority item with the Democratic Congress?
It's not in this first 100-hour agenda, and I can tell you it will not get through the Senate. This is the credit card companies have a hold on the Senate, the likes of which are like a death grip. So while I think you can see it coming out of the House if we take the House, if Democrats take the House, I think it will be very unlikely it can survive in the Senate.
Tragically. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're live with Bob Borisage.
Hey, Bob. I just wanted to challenge you on your description of Bernie Sanders as a democratic socialist. That word socialist has been so demonized. Just because Bernie Sanders supports democracy in the workplace doesn't mean he's a Marxist and supports tyranny. You have to get that word out of your vocabulary. Even when you say socialist economies of Switzerland, Sweden, they're democracies with regulated capital markets. This word socialist, take it out of, that's a con talking point word. You got to get it out of your vocabulary.
I take your point. Let me just tell you a funny story about Bernie, though. That Bernie actually does call himself a democratic socialist, by which he means he's for a basic bread and butter economic agenda in America. And he says he runs as that in Vermont and not as a liberal, but Republicans in Vermont attack him as a liberal because that's less popular. And, of course, liberal is related to more to the social issues and not to the bread and butter economic issues. But I take your point around the other rest of the country, that would be seen as alien, and he's certainly a Democrat, not a Marxist.
Well, and Bernie's, we know Bernie really well. He's an hour on this program every Friday. And has about 3.5
years. He's terrific.
And in any case, we're talking with Bob Borisage, the Campaign for America's Future. Bob, you're doing absolutely great work. People can help out. They can participate. Ourfuture.org?
Yep, ourfuture.org.
That's the place. That's the place to go for the whole scoop and all the information. And the rise of populists in the Senate and the election driven by the collapse of the conservatives, we've got to get out there and get active. This is such an important election. Bob Borisage, thanks so much for being with us today.
Take care.
Good talking with you. Ourfuture.org, the website. It's 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. The pill that will help you escape the matrix. Our number 1-866-440-8466. Hey, today, a great anniversary, the advent of the 8-hour day, right after that.
Now I might be old-fashioned, but I believe it's true that folks around the world are pretty much like me and you. I have a silly notion if we want them to be friends, they prefer that we don't torture them. But I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
Unforgivable.
I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
He's your typical liberal.
Yes, welcome back to the radio support group of By It For We the People of the United States of America. As George Washington said, I am proud to be a liberal. As Jack Kennedy said, I am proud to be a liberal. Today, on this day in history, in 1940, after a long, this is from the History Channel, History.com, after a long and frustrating struggle to win government and popular support, proponents of the 40-hour work week finally saw their dreams become legislative reality when the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was passed into law in 1940, saying that if you worked more than 40 hours a week, you had to be paid time and a half. It was the 8-hour day. If you worked more than an 8-hour day, you had to be paid time and a half. The net effect of it was the 40-hour work week because it was a five-day week. But today, the official birthday of the 8-hour day. Before that, there were 9-hour days and 10-hour days and 11-hour days. And, you know, what I typically work, 12-hour days. So some days I'm working 15, 16-hour days. But I'm on a mission from God here. It doesn't quite count. So blue-collar Democrats return to their roots. This is interesting. The Times of London reporting on this. I find it so odd that so much of this really good reporting about what's being done in the United States is being done from outside the United States. Instead, you have the talking head shows on TV where the talking heads sit around and go, oh, yeah, well, you know, the the Democrats might take the House, wouldn't that be a disaster? And they go through all this weird stuff about how bad it'll be. It's going to be a terrible thing, and it's unhappy. But the actual what's going on in America is, excuse me, I just had a window pop up and blow me off here, blow me offline. Is not being reported. Here we have blue collar Democrats return to their roots. This by the Times of London, Times Online. Republican analysts believe that Mr. Santorum's problems. They're talking about Rick Santorum. In fact, actually, here's how the article opens up. Even in the most febrile atmosphere of modern U.S. politics, you can tell a candidate is in really deep trouble when he screams at his opponent during a televised debate. Quit lying to them, Bob. Tell them the truth. You're lazy. The man screaming is Rick Santorum, also known as Rick Man-on-Dog Santorum. One-man Democrats would love to destroy more than any other in next month's midterm elections. They talk about how he's clearly not going down without a fight. Republican analysts believe that Mr. Santorum's problems are rooted in the return of white, blue-collared voters to the Democratic fold a generation after Ronald Reagan wooed them to the Republican cause. The Reagan Democrats, they say, have been a cornerstone of Republican electoral success for the last 20 years, especially in the Midwest, still the battleground for presidential contests. By the early 1980s, these traditional Democratic voters... It's interesting here, even in the Times of London, of course, the Times is owned by Rupert Murdoch, so, you know, maybe there's a bias. It actually says traditional Democrat voters. Isn't it amazing how they're trying to change the name of the party? It's the Democratic Party. I know that Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz say that you shouldn't call it the Democratic Party because that sounds too, democratic. It sounds too nice. So call it the Democrat Party and emphasize the last syllable so you can say rat real loud. But when you see it in the media, man, it makes me crazy. Anyhow, by the early 1980s, these traditional Democrat voters, both rural and urban lower middle class, no longer saw Democrats as their champions. Socially conservative, they were attracted by Mr. Reagan's simple message of moral values, fiscal responsibility, and national security. Millions fled to the Republicans and stayed. Well, turns out they're not staying there anymore. This is interesting here. Frank Luntz, a Republican pollster and one of the strategists behind the party's 1994 takeover of Congress, told the Times of London, quote, "The Santorum race shows that Reagan Democrats are returning to their roots. Economic issues among blue-collar social conservatives are now subsuming concerns about social issues. The Republican Party has failed them. It didn't cut spending. It wasn't honest." See, I don't think that they cared if it cut spending. Maybe military spending. It hasn't controlled immigration. Well, that's true. On issue after, and the Democrats don't seem to be much more enthusiastic about that, but in any case, on issue after issue, it didn't do what these voters expected. Mr. Luntz said that this political re-migration of Reagan Democrats, which, if realized next month, would represent a profound change of the American political landscape, is occurring across the Midwest, where the economy is arguably an even greater issue than Iraq. And then they talk about Bill Casey. He's the guy, you know. He's the classic Democratic candidate. They quote this guy, the 72-year-old retired salesman, Bill Zerbe, who's been voted as a Democrat up until 1984 and then joined the Republicans with Reagan. And he says, "I'm voting Democrat again now. Should be Democratic. I'm disappointed in the Republicans. They're dishonest. They talk about morals and principles, but do otherwise. Any Democrat now gets my vote. Good on you." 27 minutes after the hour.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. And God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah. We're living on the edge.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, heads up, the second annual Great Debate being put on by Quake Radio, our affiliate in San Francisco, the Quake, and by 910 KNEW in San Francisco, the conservative station there. You can get free tickets at quakeradio.com. Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, Johnny Steele, and I will be debating Jack Armstrong, Joe Getty, Jerry Doyle, and Rusty Humphreys. The Honorable Willie Brown going to moderate the occasion Friday, October 27th. This Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. at the University of San Francisco War Memorial Gymnasium. So be there or be square. Free tickets, quakeradio.com. And we'll get you, you know, everything you need. Everything you need to know, and even those things you don't need to know that you need to know, if, you know how that goes. ABC News has obtained an independent report commissioned by the state of Maryland. This is from an ABC News story, abcnews.com. By the state of Maryland, conducted by Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC, revealing that the original Diebold factory passwords are still being used on many voting machines. The SAIC study also showed myriad other security flaws, including administrative override passwords that cannot be changed by local officials, but can be used by hackers or those who have seen the disks. The report further says that one of the high risks of the system comes if operating code disks are lost, stolen, or seen by unauthorized parties. Now, why is this relevant? Here's this study, this SAIC study, Science and Applications International Corporation, a company that certifies voting machines. This study coming out saying, well, you know, the danger is if anybody gets a hold of the software, the Diebold software. Well, here are the first three sentences of the story that ABC News ran. Cheryl Kagan, a former Maryland Democratic legislator, was shocked when she opened her mail Wednesday morning. Inside, she discovered three computer disks. With them was an anonymous letter saying the disks contained the secret source code for vote counting that could be used to alter the votes cast through Maryland's new electronic voting machines. ABC News goes on to say computer experts and government officials have voiced serious concern that if these machines malfunction, no paper record will exist for a recount. Even worse is the fear that an election could be hacked. Hacked. In Maryland, by the way, in the last election, screens froze and memory cards went missing. The governor, Governor Robert Ehrlich, a Republican running for re-election, is advising residents to vote by absentee ballot because he doesn't have confidence in the machines. He says, I don't care if we paid $500 million or $1 billion. It's going to put the election at risk. There's no price tag for a phony election or a fraudulent election. This from the Republican governor. Pretty amazing, you know, when you think about it. Or is this the setup for when the Republicans steal the vote and then they say, those Democrats did it? I don't know. Time now for our, it's been a while since we've had one, for our Limbaugh alert.
With condescending tries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
Our Rush alert for the day. Now he's at it again.
I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead. Hey, with the face of a horse's ass.
Yeah, and he is definitely at it again. Michael J. Fox. Michael J. Fox dealing with the ravages of Parkinson's, a disease which may be curable with stem cell research. Well, here's the story. Canadian Press, Associated Press. His body visibly racked by tremors, actor Michael J. Fox speaks out for Missouri Democratic Senate candidate Claire McCaskill in a television ad that promotes her support for embryonic stem cell research. As you might know, I care deeply about stem cell research, says Fox, 45, who has struggled with Parkinson's disease for more than a decade. In Missouri, he says, you can elect Claire McCaskill, who shares my hope for cures. Well, in the ad, he's trembling. Why? Well, because he's not taking his medication. And why? Because he doesn't like the side effects of the medication, like hallucinations and mental stupor, for when he's doing things like testifying in public or doing commercials, TV commercials. Obviously, if the side effect of a medication is to make you so stoned you can hardly talk, even though it makes you stop shaking, would you take that if you were going to do a commercial? But no, Limbaugh has a completely different take on this.
I must share this. I have gotten a plethora of emails from people saying Michael J. Fox has admitted in interviews that he goes off his medication for Parkinson's disease when he appears before Congress or other groups as a means of illustrating the ravages of the disease. So lest there be any misunderstanding, we talked about a half hour ago of the commercial that's running for Claire McCaskill featuring Michael J. Fox, and now what appears to be when he's off his meds. I'd never seen him this way. And I stated when I saw the ad was commenting to you about it that he's either off his medication or acting. He is an actor, after all.
Yeah, so is Reagan. And Limbaugh talking about people being off their meds.
In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-at-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm the fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm fear-mongering scum bad with the face of a horse's ass.
Yes, our Rush Alert for the day, or for the week. I mean, if I had to do these every day, I'd have to do stop doing talk radio. Oh, man. So, anyhow, and now, another alert. Another alert. Yep, it's a voting machine alert.
Just a push of a button, just a touch of a screen. Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
This again from ABC News. I mean, what is it about ABC following all these stories? As if there weren't enough concerns about the integrity of the vote, a nonpartisan civic organization today claimed it had hacked into the voter database for the 1.35 million voters in the city of Chicago. Bob Wilson, an official of the Illinois Ballot Integrity Project, which bills itself as a not-for-profit civic organization dedicated to the correction of election system deficiencies, tells ABC News that last week his organization hacked the database, which contains detailed information about hundreds of thousands of Chicago voters, including their social security numbers and dates of birth. Yes, a voting machine problem. It's a serious identity theft problem, says Wilson, but also a problem that could potentially create problems with the election. A nefarious hacker could have changed every voter's status from active to inactive, which would have prevented them from voting, he said. If we'd wanted to, we could have wiped out the entire database, he said. And it's all right there on the Internet. Gee, what a surprise. Our votes are not secure in the hands of the Republicans and the administration and the Help America Vote Act. What a surprise. Privatization of the vote doesn't work. What a surprise. Berkeley in Sacramento, California. Hey, Berkeley, you have a suggestion for how I should introduce Al Gore tonight?
Yes, as the next president of the United States.
Oh, that's a good idea. He's
due. We need him.
Maybe I should call him the once and future president of the United
States. Perfect. There you go.
Where did that phrase come from? Do you know? There was a the title of a book or a movie or something?
I'm not sure, but it's very appropriate in this case.
The once and future president of the United States. So write that down, David. We've got a campaign.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay. Al Berkeley. Thank you very much for that.
Sure.
That little Al Gore tip. Dixie in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dixie, we have about a minute before we've got to take a break.
Yeah,
what's up?
I heard something on Air America. Evidently, somebody called in and made a statement that when that rocket took off from Baghdad that blew up that munitions jump.
Right.
That 300
people. Yeah, I've heard that. I've read that on the web.
And I don't know if there's any truth.
The suggestion was that they weren't American soldiers, but they were Iraqi soldiers, and I've seen no corroboration of it.
And then also there's evidently some of our soldiers have figured a way of being active duty to write Congress and basically ask
yes.
them to take them out of there.
Yes, a group of soldiers have petitioned Congress for to basically get us out of Iraq. In fact, we're going to talk about that in the next hour of the program.
Okay.
You're absolutely right, Dixie.
Yeah,
and thank you for the heads up and for the call on that. Time now for the Tom Hartman Program's Progressive Pop Quiz. Our question for today, on 9/11/2006, the fifth anniversary of 9/11, a suicide bomber blew up himself in his car in what country? And, by the way, the correct answer is not Iraq. The sixth caller, although somebody did there, too. The sixth caller with the correct answer at 1-866-440-8466 gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed! 45 minutes past the hour.
The surplus is wasting, deficits high. People are dying, lie after lie. Enrich your corporate buddies, cut down the trees. Pump all the oil, just take what you please. The time is now to change this regime. So get off the couch, fix our toxic machine. Big business owns our government. We should all be afraid. I'll say it again. Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by while they turn out the lights. Don't stand by till we lose the prize. It's time for regime change. It's time for regime change.
Indeed, and it's up to you and me, my friends. 51 minutes past the hour, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Congratulations, we have a winner in our progressive pop quiz. Our question once again, on 9/11/2006, and David, hand me that original story if you don't mind. On 9/11/2006, a suicide bomber blew up himself and his car in what country other than Iraq? Odds are there, you know, at least one did it in Iraq. And congratulations to Kip Anderson in Eugene, Oregon.
Tom Hartman.
Yeah, he who gets screwed gets his own copy. Hey, you're supposed to play the applause, Alex, not the. Thank you. That's fair. Jeez. Oh, man. The people I work with, they're brilliant. But, you know, along with brilliance comes a certain amount of craziness, which I cop to, too. I mean, the unofficial slogan of this program, fair and slightly unbalanced. Anyhow, Kip knew that the correct answer is the United States of America. And the only person who reported it in the entire mainstream media, it appeared in one newspaper, the Detroit Free Press, and it appeared on one television program, Keith Olbermann's MSNBC show, and that was it. Even though the Associated Press put it out on the wire service and anybody could have run it, nobody chose to on the anniversary of 9/11, Mr. David McMenemy drove his car into a building in Davenport, Iowa, hoping to blow it up and kill himself in the fire. Why? Because he thought he was blowing up an abortion clinic. Turns out it was a women's health center. It sure enough was. But they don't do abortions there. Sorry. It's mostly for low-income patients, and they give them things like pap smears to see if they have, you know, at risk for cervical cancer. Obgyn care. Testing for sexually transmitted diseases, birth control, and nutrition and immunization programs for women and children and pregnant women. But he was on a mission from God, this guy. Good old crazy David McMenemy. And can you imagine if on the anniversary of 9/11, one single slightly brown-skinned, Arab-looking person had driven a suicide car into any building in America, the President of the United States would have held a news conference. In fact, I would submit to you that if on 9/11/2006, the fifth anniversary of 9/11, if a brown-skinned Arab or Muslim person in the United States had even been caught talking about driving a car into a building in a suicide attack in the United States of America, the President of the United States would have held a press conference. Because after all, it's all about be afraid, be very afraid. The clock is ticking. Well, here we had a real-life terrorist. He's a member of this group called the Army of God. They send out 554 now times. They have sent out envelopes containing white powder with messages, "You have been exposed to anthrax. We are going to kill all of you." Clayton Wagoner, one of their martyrs, mailed anthrax letters while a fugitive on the FBI's 10 most wanted list for terrorist crimes. He says, "I am a terrorist," on their website, boasting that God freed me to make war on his enemy. He claimed that he knew where 42 Planned Parenthood workers lived. He says, "It doesn't matter to me if you're a nurse, receptionist, bookkeeper, or janitor. If you work for the murderous abortionist, I'm going to kill you," end quote. In this war, in this terrorist war against Americans inside the United States, since 1977, there have been 7 murders, 17 attempted murders, 3 kidnappings, 152 assaults, 305 completed or attempted bombings and arsons, 375 invasions, 482 stalking incidents, 380 death threats, 618 bomb threats, 100 acid attacks, 1,254 acts of vandalism, 77 anthrax letters before 9/11, never once reported as acts of terrorism, and 554 anthrax letters containing white powder messages like "you've been exposed to anthrax" since 9/11. None of it covered by the media. But I'm telling you, you get one brown-skinned person out there who speaks with a little bit of an accent, especially if they're Muslim, man, George W. Bush would be on that like white on rice. Charles Neverett, Washington. Hey, Charles, what's up?
And that is because George is pumping the keg at the frat party of fear, and we, as a nation, have been drunk on his Kool-Aid of fear for 5 years now.
That's a marvelous metaphor, Charles.
Thanks. Well, on the lighter side, well, that's what I've been spreading. In fact, there's a sign on my car that says, "Purge the Kool-Aid of fear." Jim Jones had nothing on George W.
Yeah.
But on the lighter side, I think it's unfair to pigs everywhere to be compared to Rush Limbaugh, because pigs are really very smart animals.
You're right. You're right. They're actually smarter than dogs.
Have a great day.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Charles. Good to hear from you. And thanks for listening there on Talk 1090 in Seattle. Ah! Oh, yeah. Okay. I apologize to the pigs for comparing you to Mr. Limbaugh. You're right. We'll be back. Bush braces for fight if GOP loses House. Well, maybe. We'll see. Fox News warning of an upcoming socialist revolution. I'll tell you about that right after the news. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Boy, is she pretty. Man, oh man. This very attractive little blonde lady here. Putting her finger out in front of her face and just going, give me a call. The fact that she's a blonde, attractive young blonde woman saying, hey, give me a call. Here it is. Just listen.
Harold, call me.
Harold, call me. Right. Well, the Harold is Harold Ford, who's African American. He's running for the United States Senate in Tennessee. He's a good guy. And the Republicans are pulling out all the stops. They are playing the race card big time. talking about, he was seen at a Playboy function. You know, like Playboy raised money for him or something. I don't even know the details of this thing. This is like they're pulling this stuff out of the blogosphere or something. And having attractive white women say, oh, he looks like a nice guy. I mean, this is such a tragedy, this ad. This is the RNC ad smearing Harold Ford. Here it is.
Harold Ford looks nice. Isn't that enough? Terrorists need their privacy.
When I die, Harold Ford will let me pay taxes again.
Ford's right. I do have too many guns.
I met Harold at the Playboy party.
I'd love to pay higher marriage taxes.
Canada can take care of North Korea. They're not busy.
So we took money from porn movie producers. I mean, who hasn't?
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Harold, call me.
Man, does it get any sicker than this? I mean, does it get any sicker than this? I am just astounded. The Republicans, ever since Nixon's Southern Strategy, you know, where the Republicans started just relatively openly appealing to racism, we've known it was there. But, I mean, this is incredible. This is just incredible. And then on top of this, you get George W. Bush saying, oh, yeah, the insurgents, they're trying to influence our elections.
And for the first time, the president acknowledged parallels to Vietnam. It came when I asked for his response to New York Times columnist Tom Friedman's contention that we're now seeing an Iraqi version of the Viet Cong's 1968 Tet Offensive that turned American public opinion decisively against the war.
He could be right. There's certainly a stepped-up level of violence, and we're heading into an election.
So they're trying to influence the elections?
Good. I don't know. I don't have any intelligence that says that.
Yeah, right. Now, let's see. You have people in Iraq who are down to 2.5 hours a day of electricity, the lowest it's been since we started bombing their country. Honest to goodness, the lowest it has been since we started bombing their country. It has steadily declined for 6 years, even though you and I have spent almost $1 trillion, or allocated, we've spent about $500-600 billion for Halliburton and Bechtel and all these other companies to restore the electricity. We're down to about 2.4 hours a day of electricity for the average Iraqi, and they're looking around going, let's see. There's four U.S. oil companies that are pumping our oil out of our country as fast as they possibly can. The middle class has fled. The wealthy have fled. The few who call themselves the rulers of Iraq are living inside the green zone, protected by Blackwater and other private guards who are being paid $150,000 a year, when in Iraq the average salary is $500 a year. They're looking around saying, we don't want these people here. I mean, it gets back to my comment that if the United States had been attacked by Canada, I would probably be out there at the front of the line of people who are saying, okay, we're going to fight them. We're going to fight the British Empire just like we did in 1776. We don't want this country occupied, and neither do the Iraqis. And Bush is like, well, there's an election coming up, Yeah, it's all about an election.
And we're heading into an election.
So they're trying to influence the elections?
He throws out his talking points, and Stephanopoulos calls him on it. Well, I mean, this is tragic. The other thing is, Bush essentially telling us that he would really rather not be president. He doesn't like living in the White House. He'd rather not be. I mean, after all, there's responsibilities. There's work. He'd much rather be on his former pig farm, his little showcase ranch that he bought just in time for the 2000 election, so he could look like a, sold off their mansion in Dallas and bought this former pig farm and nice place. Nice place he's got down there in Crawford.
I'm curious, have you ever Googled anybody? Do you use Google?
Occasionally. And one of the things I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
And it's very interesting to see. I forgot the name of the program, but you get the satellite and you can, like I kind of like to look at the ranch. Remind me of where I want to be sometimes.
Remind me of where I want to be sometimes. And he knows how to use the Google. Isn't that reassuring? I can tell you, I am just so reassured. George W. Bush knows how to use the Google. Man. It's absolutely spooky. Okay, why is it that this story, which is on the AP wire, the Associated Press wire, to the best of my ability to track it down, was not picked up by any newspapers outside Pennsylvania? In fact, the copy that I'm reading is from the Globe and Mail of Canada, the Toronto Globe and Mail. A coal mine explosion killed a Pennsylvania miner Monday, but four others were able to escape, authorities said. The blast happened at the R&D Coal Company anthracite mine in Schuylkill County, about 130 kilometers northwest of Philadelphia. Kurt Noss, a spokesman for the State Department of Environmental Protection, said, "We have one confirmed fatality. I believe it is a recovery and not a rescue operation." State and federal investigators were attempting to determine the cause, he said. Four other miners who were underground at the time were able to get out, said Kate Duggan, a spokeswoman for the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Eastern Pennsylvania has the country's only deposits of anthracite, a type of hard, relatively clean-burning coal that once heated millions of homes but now represents a tiny sliver of the U.S. coal industry. The mines still operating, are typically small with only a few miners. So far this year, there have been 41 other deaths in U.S. coal mining accidents, none in Pennsylvania. In the deadliest incident, 12 men were killed at the Sago mine in northwest Virginia in January. Now, what the Globe and Mail had the good graces, I suppose, not to point out was that there have been no fatalities in the Canadian mines, even though there have been several accidents that have trapped miners. What's the difference? Well, in Canada, all the miners are members of unions. And the unions in Canada negotiated as part of their deal, if we're going to go down in your mines, you are going to build safe rooms in those mines where we can survive for up to 48 hours. Whereas in the United States, very few of our miners, in fact, Sago, when this disaster happened, I went and started Googling the company. And back about 2-3 years ago, when the company was sold by the company that sold the company to some company that they sold the company to that then sold it to another company, it's been through a couple of loops here. One of the things that they said in one of their filings is that one of the things that gave them value in the marketplace, one of the reasons why people should invest in them, was that they were free of unions, that they had successfully busted the unions. I mean, this is like they're bragging about it, the potential investors. You get it? I mean, if you look at a chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average from 1900 to 1980, there's a little blip around 1929, but by and large, it's a fairly level, you know, never goes above, you know, it's like kind of slowly creeps up to 1980, gets up around 1,000, 1,500. And then Reagan comes in and starts shifting wealth away from the worker class and toward the investor class. And where would you expect to see evidence of that? In the Dow. As the Dow is going up, every time the Dow Jones Industrial Average goes up, it means more workers are getting screwed in America. And now it's hitting 13,000. Oh, the workers are getting screwed like crazy. And when they're dying, we don't even cover it in our media in the United States anymore. It's like, it's just another coal miner died. It's not even necessary, but it would hurt the stock value. 16 minutes past the hour.
October surprise, I'm keeping my eyes peeled for you. What's the good word, my friend? What rule will Republicans bend? October surprise, announce a truce or maybe start a new war. You sure can't say they haven't done it before.
for every time they get the chance. There's the inevitable question. That question, is any election even real? Those black boxes make it easy, so easy. American elections to steal October surprise.
And welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. TomHartman.com if you'd like to drop into our live chat room or participate in our message boards. Amazing, the stuff that's going on here. Yes, absolutely amazing. Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly has just gone over the edge, around the corner. The guy is gone. He's toast. He's freaked out. He's plain old flat out nuts. He says, you don't have to worry about the Taliban in Afghanistan. No, there's no Taliban there. I've talked to everybody. I talked to everybody, he says. He's talking to Harvard University professor Sarah Sewall, who actually knows about this stuff. Supreme NATO commander General James Jones recently said, quote, Afghanistan is close to becoming a narco state. $3 billion financing the Taliban. Dr. Barnett Rubin of the Council on Foreign Relations says Afghanistan is at a tipping point, and that the Afghan people believe trends are going in the Taliban's favor. General David Richards, a British officer who commands NATO's 32,000 troops, says unless coalition forces begin stepping up reconstruction effort, 70% of the country could decide to back the Taliban. That's what the soldiers on the ground, the commanders on the ground are saying. Here is Bill O'Reilly. Obviously, he's been chewing mushrooms or smoking something he shouldn't be smoking. Maybe Russia's been sharing his drugs with him. I don't know. Talking to Sarah Sewall, a professor at Harvard University, about this.
But look, we were successful in Afghanistan, and nobody thought we would overthrow the Taliban in that way. So we were successful.
Unfortunately, Afghanistan's going backwards,
which I think speaks to
part of the problem with the focus of effort on Iraq. We risk losing the progress that had been made in Afghanistan.
That's not true. There's always going to be a Taliban insurrection as long as they have No, it's not. Every military analyst working for our team says most of that country is passing.
Maybe you should be talking to the people on the ground,
Concerned. You're just parroting the left-wing line that America doesn't know what it's doing.
I'm parroting conversations with commanders who are in uniform.
Right, so have I. And our information is that there's no danger at all of the Taliban reclaiming that country. None. They'll be annoying. There'll be guerrilla warfare. It will not happen, I believe.
I would almost say I want some of what he's smoking, but I really don't. I mean, if it causes you to become that sick and twisted and delusional, and you're just parroting the left-wing line that America doesn't know what it's doing. No, it's not the left-wing line, and it's not about America knowing what it's doing. It's the American line that the Bush administration doesn't know what it's doing, that Rumsfeld doesn't know what he's doing, that Rumsfeld is just so completely and totally screwed up. And that none of this would have happened if we hadn't decided to invade Iraq halfway through our invasion of Afghanistan. I mean, it's like, you know, the Japanese bomb us at Pearl Harbor. Well, let's drop a few bombs on Japan, and then in the middle of that, let's just decide, oh, what the heck, let's invade Brazil. And we'll cut our forces in the battle against Japan back to 15,000 soldiers. Well, we're going to throw all our forces against Brazil. I mean, that's where the real battle is, right? Yeah. In the meantime, I shared with you the racist ad against Harold Ford a minute ago. William Cohen, the former Republican senator, talking to Wolf Blitzer on CNN.
I think the Republicans have to be careful also in terms of not engaging in conduct. And I was watching the Tennessee race specifically. It reminded me of what happened in North Carolina with Harvey Gantt, a purely overt racist approach.
You're talking about the new RNC ad, which has this white woman talking about Playboy and the African-American candidate, Harold Ford Jr., the Democratic candidate.
To me, at least as I watched that, is a very serious appeal to a racist sentiment. And when the question is always asked why he would be the first African-American since Reconstruction elected to the Senate, you say, well, why is that the case? So why is the South different? Why would they not elect
So you're a former Republican senator. Is the RNC playing the racial card against Harold Ford in Tennessee right now?
I think they're coming very close to it, if not doing it exactly. I think they ought to stop it. I think that they have a candidate, discuss the issues on the merits, and not get into that kind of personal type of attack.
Yeah, well said. What he's talking about with Harvey Gantt, Harvey Gantt was the mayor of Charlotte, and he was running against Jesse Helms back in 1990, and it looked like he might actually win. And so the Republicans pulled the race card out. They ran an ad showing a pair of white hands crumbling up a piece of paper, a rejection letter. Sorry, you didn't get the job. And the voiceover said, you needed that job and you were the best qualified, but they had to give it to a minority because of a racial quota. And Harvey Gantt lost. They played the race card and they won, the Republicans. So Jesse Helms won. 27 minutes past the hour.
But that's not the world I live in. This is not the life for me. My world's bigger than your problems, and it's bigger than me. That's not the world I live in. This is not the life for me. My world's bigger than your problems, and it's bigger than me.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, announcing the October surprise contest on the Tom Hartman program message blogs. The first person to post the correct answer to what's the Bush administration's October surprise gets an autographed copy of my book, Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. The day after the election, we'll be putting up a poll so members can vote on the winner and four runners-up. Each will receive an autographed copy of Screwed. When the winner will be announced on November 13th. And, of course, this is all over at TomHartman.com. Actually, TomHartman.org, if you want to go directly to the message board. But at TomHartman.com, there's a link right up there. Excuse me, at the top of the page. It'll get you over there. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Michael in Palmer, Alaska, listening on KUDO. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Tom. Hey, listen, I love your playlist. I think you should really... do more with it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, there's some great music out there, and Louisa's just a genius at finding it and getting it on. And we're starting a small premium area over at TomHartman.org where we can, you know, hopefully get enough resources that we can start doing things like, you know, linking out to where people can find things like that and the stories that we're using for the day and things like that. So anyway.
Great job.
That's not what you called about, though.
I called to tell you that it's a story untold that is really fantastic up here in Alaska with a candidate called Diane Benson. Diane Benson now has a real close, she has a very, very good chance of beating Don Young 17 terms. He's been there 27 years.
Yeah, this is the Republican congressman.
This is the Republican congressman, as everyone knows, who put through the bridges to nowhere, who is considered to be the second most corrupt in the Congress, second only to Harris down in Florida, and the third worst congressman, and for not showing up and blundering most of the time through his 27 years. Now Diane is a mother of an army infantry person who lost the bottom part of two legs 3 days after he was supposed to come home in Iraq. Then she is gone from zero money now to really being a contender, and she's she's Alaskan native Tlingit woman. She is a former truck driver, union member up on the slope years ago. She's a poet, she's a publisher, And she is doing a fantastic job with little or no help from the DNC or national parties or state parties giving her money to go the last 3 weeks.
Michael, if any of our listeners want to help Diane Benson out up there in Alaska to unseat Don Young, how do they do it? Is there a website?
There is a website. It's www.BensonForCongress.com.
Is that F-O-R Congress? Spelled out?
Yes. Benson for Congress.
B-E-N-S-O-N-F-O-R Congress.org, you said?
Dot com.
Dot com. Okay, dot com. Thank you.
Committee to elect And the thing that's really astounding to me is this DNC and the state and the refuse to give her the last bit of money. She hasn't even done radio and TV. She's saved everything for the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to go on your show, actually.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, you know, David's writing her name down right now.
Okay, I mean, and I got the number.
By all means. Well, don't give it to us on the air, but you can drop David a note, david@tomhartman.com, and he'll get it.
Tom, this is absolutely ignored throughout the country.
It could be.
She's anti-war, but she's also pro-Alaska, and she's out all over the state talking to villages. She's talking to clubs. She's talking to anybody who will listen, and now she's really on a hot roll.
Well, good on Diane Benson. You know, Michael, one of the things that we've noticed is that the DCCC is headed up by, I believe it's run by Rahm Emanuel, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
And Rahm Emanuel is also one of the leaders of the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council. And so he's been, it's interesting, in what have become the tight races, only 35% of the Democrats running for election who are getting who are getting DCCC money are in favor of pulling out of Iraq, for example, whereas, you know, 80% of the Democratic Party is, members of the party, and more than 50% of Americans are. And it's what's happening is that Rahm Emanuel and others in the DLC are steering money to the DLC Democratic candidates, but not to the truly progressive Democratic candidates. Is that part of the reason why Diane is not getting the aid that she might need, do you think?
I think that must be the case, because there's no reason to not give this woman a chance to beat, you know, one of the most corrupt congressmen in the state, in the country.
Yeah.
There's no other reason for it. And I think this is a pattern that Rahm Emanuel and I dare say the Clinton corporate Democrats are just hand-picking, and they're they continue to make the same mistake as they did in 2004. They don't listen to the people, and they are afraid. Yeah. And fear is not a reason to be in politics.
Yeah, I agree. Michael, thank you for the call. Well said. And Benson, Benson, for Congress.com is Diane Benson's website. MoveOn.org, by the way, is doing some really great stuff, in particular these phone parties to help take back Congress. They are transcending the DLC, you know, nonsense out there. It's and good on them for doing it. Let me encourage you to check out MoveOn.org and their website. And another thing that they're doing is they are encouraging people to call members of Congress who are in safe, secure seats. There are a lot of Democrats, a lot of Democratic members of Congress, who there's just absolutely no doubt they're going to get reelected. I mean, they're sitting on, you know, 60, 70, 80% majority in the polls. There's just no doubt they're going to get elected. And they're sitting on millions of dollars. And so what MoveOn.org is calling for is for us to contact those safe seat members and ask them to give 30% of their war chest to people like Diane Benson, who are in these, you know, possible swing areas, who could become breakthrough candidates. And I think that's a marvelous thing too. And you can find out information about that over at MoveOn.org is you know the whole thing. So under election 2006, they've some cool stuff they're doing. Matthew in Seattle. Hey Matthew, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was calling about Rush Limbaugh's comments about Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, no, specifically and, about Michael J. Fox. But yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't sit back and let that man educate the American public about how this disease works. He was moving around because of his medication.
Oh, really?
If he was not on his medication, he could not move at all.
Oh, so I had it backwards.
Yes, the Sinemet and levodopa that he's given caused that kind of reaction.
Oh, interesting. So then what Parkinson's does is cause progressive paralysis? I thought Parkinson's caused progressive trembling.
No, the tremors come from the medication, from levodopa and Sinemet.
Oh, interesting, because, you know,
Parkinson's
I've met a couple of people with Parkinson's in my life, and they were trembling, and I But I didn't, you know, I've never known anybody well who had it, so I've never had an opportunity to observe the progression of the disease.
Yeah, I have a cousin of that disease called essential tremor, which is all shaking. My body doesn't stop shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had deep brain stimulators installed last year that stopped my shaking. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, Michael J. Fox, when he had Parkinson's, this treatment was not available.
Mm-hmm.
But the medication that they take causes them to shake and tremble. Parkinson's actually causes you to freeze up. Your muscles freeze.
Interesting.
You can't
Interesting.
Speak. The only thing you can move is your eyes.
So
if he was not on his medication, he wouldn't be moving around like that.
Interesting. Matthew, thanks for the heads up.
Certainly. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. Bonnie in Sacramento, California. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can. What's up?
Okay, because I accidentally hit my mute button. I called Congressperson Matsui's office a little bit ago, and the response I got from their office is that, well, she doesn't have a campaign office, and we're not allowed to talk about money in a government office.
Oh, interesting. The latter, oh, gee, how could that be? I mean, if they never talk to lobbyists, they never talk to...
I don't know. So they told me to call DCCC, which gave me, you'll have to call Brown and Durston's office to find out, because we know she's helping.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them are. I had a conversation with Congressman Brian Barrett of Vancouver, Washington this morning. And Brian, you know, there's nobody doubts that Brian's a Democrat, and he's a good guy, and he's gonna win. I mean, you know, there's just no doubt about it. And I said, you know, Congressman Barrett, are you gonna give some of your money? You know, MoveOn is calling for 30% of the money from people in safe seats to go to other people. And he said that he is. He didn't specify an exact percentage. He said it's not as simple as all that, though. He said sometimes, you know, if you give up that war chest, that means that the Republicans will then come after you. And, you know, suddenly you're vulnerable. You know, it's in any case, I think it's a good campaign, and I'm glad to see that they're out there doing it. And Bonnie, good on you for making the phone calls. I mean, that's activism. Thank you. It's getting on the ground. That's what we all need to be doing, getting out there and getting active. 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, and occasionally even George Washington, maybe even Jack Kennedy, but not some right-wing think tank. No siree, Bob. We'll be right back.
Florida and 9/11 changed our world. Bush saw his chance, the flag was unfurled, the iceberg's tip was there to see, but we couldn't know how bad it would be. Ashcroft, Cheney, the lie in Iraq, Bill of Rights gutted by the Patriot Act, energy, environment, deceptions go on until soon, all our rights will be gone. Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by, don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by till we lose the prize. You've got to open your eyes.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh. And guaranteed not to cause stiff thinking. 9 minutes before the hour. It's amazing. This is happening from the federal level. That is, you know, the United States Senate races, like the Harold Ford's race in Tennessee, where they're using racism against this guy. The Republicans are playing the race card. It worked for Jesse Helms, by the way. When the Republicans played the race card back in 1980, it worked for Jesse Helms. And it may work against Harold Ford. It may well work. The appealing to people's worst instincts sometimes is a successful political strategy. I would add that there should be no place in the American political arena for a party that would do such a thing. It's beyond disgusting. Similar, and it goes all the way down to the local level. For example, here in Oregon, down in Eugene, Senator Vicky Walker, state senator. Now, this is a state office. State Senator Vicky Walker running for re-election in Eugene. And Jim Torrey, the mayor of Eugene, going after her. He sends out a campaign letter quoting a woman. I don't want to go through the whole detail of this. You can read all about it over at blueoregon.com, those of you who have an interest in Oregon politics. But he sends out a letter basically making assertions that are simply not true. So you've got Tory lying about State Senator Vicky Walker's record and behavior, just lying about it in this letter that is going out. And he could have checked this with a phone call. Or maybe he did. I don't know. But I mean, it's just this is the tragedy of rove-style politics, of attack-style politics. It does not further the discourse. We should be talking about the issues. We really should be. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe. Speaking of Oregon.
Yeah, well, exactly. Who were all the right-wing talk show hosts that met with Bush and Rove and whatnot there at the White House? I mean,
well, it was, let's see, Medved and Hugh Prager and or Dennis Prager. I don't remember all their names, frankly. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, well,
not sure I want to.
Well. Well,
it was sort of the B-list of right-wing talk show hosts.
Well, actually, I would because, you know, I think a big deal should be made about this. I mean, I think, you know, at the very least, I think radio talk show hosts, whatever their ideology are, I mean, you know, there should be some kind of independence there. I mean, you know, when you're doing something like that, I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. If even if there's no violation of law, there's them meeting with the strategy session there at the White House and the White House.
Well, these guys that he's got have become the cheering, mm-hmm. you know, the cheerleaders for the Republican Party. They're not. They don't even understand ideology. They don't understand politics. They don't understand the philosophies of governance in this country. It's all about my party versus your party. It's sports. These are the people that Bush invited to the White House. The right wing talk show hosts that Bush invited to the White House are the ones who treat politics like sport. They would never attack somebody in their own party, and they're going to go after people in other parties. I mean, it's just that simple. And you know, they're not the deep thinkers on the right.
Well, yes.
Just like Bush is not a deep thinker.
Speaking of deep thinking, I mean, you know, there was another vehicle mishap with the Bush family. I guess what was it, Bush's cousin the other day. I wonder if Rush Limbaugh is going to talk about that for the next 37 years, like they've been talking about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick.
Pretty unlikely. The list, by the way, is Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, Michael Medved, Laura Ingraham, and Mike Gallagher.
So, yeah, what a big surprise.
Yeah, there you go, Joe. Thanks a lot for the call. Alan in Pamplin, Virginia. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today from the West Coast to the East with sudden speed here?
Hey, Tom, your listeners out there who want to practice debating and get your message out there,
mm-hmm.
Get a CB radio and help me out.
Oh, yeah. Hey, are you doing the water cooler wars on CB?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of fun. I listen to your show all 3 hours every day, and I get a lot of good talking points, and it really helps me out during a debate.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Has politics become a large part of the discussion on CB radio these days?
Sometimes it does, and other times I just have to get it started.
Yeah. Are there specific channels for it?
No. There should be, because a lot of times people get upset when you get on the main channel and start talking about politics.
Yeah. Interesting, but yeah.
I figured that every time I get into a debate with somebody about politics, there's other probably about 20 or 30 other drivers listening. So
sure.
I could, doing pretty good.
Yeah, well, good on you, Alan. Good on you. We keep it up there in Virginia, and thanks for the call, and yeah, maybe we can get more people on CB. That'd be cool. Let's swing back to the West Coast here. Bill in Seattle. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. I think your information on Michael J. Fox and Rush is really really interesting, and it's like it feels good to dwell on it. Even it's like scratching an itch or something. But
yeah, I know. By the way, about Parkinson's, I'm having a raging debate going on in the chat room about whether it's the medication or the disease. I don't know, but anyway, the point you wanted to make, Bill, real quick.
Well, I think that the negative campaigning with the Republicans, their carpet bombing, is just. It really plays to their hand. People just get disgusted with the whole process and drop out.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the main purpose of negative campaigning, is to actually drive down voter participation, period. They're not trying to get you to vote for them. They're trying to get you not to vote. And that's why it's so important to get out and vote, to get out and participate, because midterm elections are won by by a very small number of people, actually, getting out and participating. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.